Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 16. This week, we talk with Nokia ambassador Lance McCarthy about Windows app development, an update to Windows Phone 8.1, and we look back to C for programming fundamentals and look forward to C Sharp 6. So, Carl, I'm really excited this week. We have an action-packed episode, and we should be able to finish this in about 10 hours.
Excellent. I got a Red Bull here, and I'm ready to go.
Perfect. Yeah, we got a ton of news. We got an awesome guest this week. So we have Lance McCarthy. He's a Windows Phone developer, and he was working for Telerik. How's it going, Lance?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me on, guys. Beautiful day up here in the Boston area, and enjoying it.
Nice. Yeah, it's great. It's great having you on here. So this is we got a lot of good stuff this episode. So let's just jump right into the news. So the first thing you have on here, Carl, Windows Phone 8.1 update. Do you want to talk about this?
Yep. Today, just for the record, is August 4th as we're recording. And as of this morning, those of you who have subscribed to the developer preview get 8.1 update. I already downloaded it and got it on, and it's full of a bunch of new features. Cortana is coming to in beta form to a few more countries. One of the really exciting things I know a lot of people are looking forward to is the live folders. So you can actually pin a bunch of apps into a folder on your start screen. Kind of in a similar way that iOS does it, but yet, you know, in a way that's true to the live tile, you know, persona and look and feel. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's,
I wanted to comment on the folders. What's interesting about this, I've been using these for a few weeks as I've had access to this for a while, but the folders were not, you know, were never really necessary in Windows Phone, because you have sort of this infinite scroll, whereas on iPhone you have a whole bunch of different screens that you flip through. That being said, I have found these things useful. I struggled at first. At first I threw a whole bunch of apps into a couple different folders, kind of just trying some different combinations. And what I ended up with, I have two folders that kind of stuck, and there's probably some other ones that I could come up with, but like I have one for travel as an example, because it's something that I do infrequently, but when I do it, I have a whole bunch of apps. You know, I have the Delta app for flying. I have the navigation apps. I have my trip application, which keeps track of all my accommodations and all those types of things. And then I have another one for work, and it's got all my work related apps. So I found the folders to be useful, even though when I first saw them, I'm like, you know, what's the point of this? But they are useful.
This was actually my favorite feature so far. Games is my favorite.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's
good. Folder already. Yeah. I was just counting them as you were explaining that. I have 19 games that would take up a good portion of my start screen. So, and the animation's spectacular. You can tell somebody put a lot of thought into the way that the tiles drop out and the way the tiles spin on the folder. It's an elegant touch to a feature that we didn't know we wanted, the way that it got implemented, and it's gorgeous. I love it.
Right, and you made a good point. The live tiles still work inside of the folder. Like, I can still see information inside of there, which is pretty neat.
Yep.
So what else is there, Carl?
So there's also stuff about SMS merging and forwarding. You can also delete individual SMS items and, you know, a few things around that. Mm-hmm. There's also a new thing. I actually have not played with this yet. It's called Apps Corner. Mm-hmm. And kind of like how you have kid mode. As far as I understand what this is a place where you could kind of put it in a mode where you could hand it off to somebody else and they only have access to those apps that you've put on there.
Right.
So it's really important. Like, we all know that there's airlines have given out Windows phones to their flight staff. And what this would allow them to do is only, you know, if they need to hand the phone to somebody in order to, you know, finish a purchase, it only has the apps on there that are, you know, customer facing. So you can't get into the personal things or the other management things that the flight attendants themselves might have access to. So this is kind of cool that way. There's also the ability to do internet sharing over Bluetooth. And I know that's something that a lot of people have asked for. And you can also do VPN for consumers. In 8.1, it was enabled for enterprise only.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives, you know, us as consumers another way to, you know, get some of those VPN capabilities that were available corporately.
Yeah. As you know, we don't do a lot of prep before the show. We kind of wing the whole thing. And so I'm just trying out this App Corner now. I honestly hadn't looked at it before. So yeah, whenever you launch it, definitely puts you into like a kiosk mode. So even if you turn off the phone, turn it back on, you're back into that same app. And then you have to use a special action to get it out of that, which I can't seem to get right now.
Uh-oh.
Doing it live.
Yeah.
So looking at this from the developer point of view, we're going to have a link in the show notes. Somebody created a pastebin that shows all the new Windows Phone 8.1 update APIs that there were. And it kind of hints that there's APIs around phone accessories. So a lot of people, you know, the big buzzword right now is, you know, having some sort of smartwatch or something. But there's a lot of APIs around that about alarms and notifications, a little bit more integration with Cortana, things like that. So we'll have a link out there. There's quite a few API endpoints to check out. And of course, another thing that came out with this today, as well as the SDK itself and new emulators for Visual Studio.
Oh, okay. So even if you don't want to put this on your phone or you don't have a Windows phone, you can actually try out this version of Windows Phone through the
exactly.
emulator. Okay. Yep. That's nice.
So taking that a next step further, breaking away from just Windows Phone news, today was also a big day for Visual Studio Update 3 for 2013. Azure SDK got updated, mm-hmm. as well as the Apache Cordova tools. That's still in CTP mode, but they got refreshed as well. So there's a lot of developer focused, you know, tools and fun stuff to play with today.
Yep. You get an update. You get an update. You get an update.
Yep.
Lots of updates. Okay. And then this next one here, this was on, I think Scott Hanselman spoke about this one, this NuGet package markdown log makes log files much prettier. I found this one interesting because I'm obsessed with Markdown now, and I know that you started using it as well, Carl, for some things. This was kind of neat because you can, you're moving things around on me. I was about to click on it. So this one is pretty neat because what it lets you do is basically output objects in .NET to a Markdown format. So it's a Markdown formatter for objects, basically, for whenever you do like a two string. So it's got different methods in here for spitting those out. So you can take a an array of objects and spit those out into a markdown table, for example. And you know, I don't know how incredibly useful this is unless you're actually trying to, you know, create something that is going to generate some markdown content. But I was thinking about this, what would be really nice for is in the actual immediate window in Visual Studio, you know, whenever you type in an object name and you have it print out, you know, if it's an object of a certain type, you sort of get that ugly type string in there. And what I've always done in the past, and a lot of people weren't aware of this, there's actually an attribute you can put on your classes, and it is called a debugger display attribute. So you can actually put above a class, you can say debugger display, and you can put a specially formatted string in there that will tell it whenever you hover over it in Visual Studio, it'll, you know, show it or tell it how to actually display that. So what I was thinking was, I don't think it could be specifically combined with that. There's a possibility. I'm not sure if you can run code in there. But basically, if you combine this markdown with your two string on your objects, you could actually get, you know, a decent view of objects whenever you're kind of playing around in Visual Studio. So you'd paste like my table into the immediate window and actually get markdown down there. So you could actually read it and get a decent view of those objects. So I haven't quite put all the pieces together here, but I think there's an opportunity to, you know, get a real clean debugger view of some of your objects whenever you're working with them. It's not something you typically use in production. Maybe you'd use it for logging, but at least during dev test, it'd be nice to see what's going on.
Yeah, and we've all seen some pretty nasty logging. So any way to make that more clear or more understandable for whoever needs to, you know, figure out what's going on, that yep. helps a lot.
Exactly. Anything that helps out with, you know, developer productivity while you're building these things. You want to talk about this next one? The mobile web should work for everyone.
Yep. So along with Windows Phone 8.1 update, Internet Explorer is getting a lot of love. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that seems kind of small that's changing, but in the mobile view, the user agent string is getting an update. So in 8.1, when you had on your phone Internet Explorer in the desktop mode, that user agent string changed, and it actually made it so the web worked better for it. They got rid of a lot of the crutches that held it to the IE hacks of the past. So what this does is it brings those in sync and in line, and things should render more similarly between them. A few other things that happened is they're making it work better to display the more popular websites in a more consistent fashion with other mobile browsers. Mm-hmm. So they are kind of taking some of those, you know, iOS and WebKit specific, you know, tags or what people may be coding specifically for those sites, and they're rendering them like iOS and WebKit would.
Okay. Now, did you say that, because I know that the user agent changed in Windows 8.1. I'm just trying to keep this straight. In this update, did the user agent change again? I'm looking at the...
Okay, so yeah, when it changed. So on IE, on your phone, mm-hmm. there's desktop mode and mobile mode.
Right.
It changed already.
For desktop mobile mode is the default.
Mobile mode is the default. And this brings the change to that mobile mode.
Right.
Correct. So all those benefits that you got for in the desktop mode, just by this user agent string change, you're going to be breaking some of the IE specific hacks of the past mm-hmm. when people do browser detection based upon user agent strings.
Yeah, this is interesting. Yeah. I'm looking at the user agent right now. So it's Mozilla 5.0, mobile, Windows Phone 8.1, Android 4, ARM, Trident 7, Touch, RV, I don't know what that is, IE Mobile 11, Nokia Lumia 1520. It says like iPhone OS 703, Mac OS 10, Apple WebKit yep. 537, KHTML, like Gecko, Mobile Safari.
Yep. Now, the second thing that we started talking about is when it takes the WebKit prefix features, IE is going to now render them. So if they don't put the MS dash on there, mm-hmm. or if they forget to do the generic one, but they do have WebKit dash, they are going to start rendering that.
Okay.
So people who are designing for other browsers, IE is going to do this too. Now, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of this because that's kind of what happened, got us into the IE6 problems. People started really coding for that.
Yeah, I think we're in a little bit different time. You know, I you're right about that. And
everybody should just play fair.
Yeah, I think developers, web developers have gotten a little bit smarter about how they do this. I mean, it was just an easy trap to fall into because it was like, hey, IE does it this way. IE is the only browser. So let's develop like this. And then Firefox came along, Chrome came along, and everybody's like, oh, okay, maybe we should do it this way. And I hope that lesson was sort of learned to not, you know, get too specific there. There's times when you have to do that, but I think this is for the better because there were a lot of sites that just rendered wrong. This is what's right for the user. You know, a lot of the sites that I go to, just everything just works much better, and it really does just work. And I don't need to, as a user, I don't need to get in the middle of this, you know, battle of developers building for a specific platform.
I've been looking at some of the examples they have on the site.
Yeah.
Hawaiian Airlines is a great example where in Windows Phone 8.1, you're getting a zoomed out view of the desktop. And with the 8.1 update, it looks great. It looks, you know, I think it looks way better than the screenshot next to it, which is for iOS 7.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of good examples on here where, you know, some of these sites were just not very usable. And to be clear, I think if the developers of these sites, I mean, these were sites that were developed where they only tested on iOS. And had they tested across all the platforms, I don't think this would have to be done at all. So this is really fixing the problem at hand, trying to create a new one.
It even fixes, you know, big sites that we use every day, like Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, on 8.1 currently, you get a fairly bland looking form that you can't zoom in on. You know, it's stuck. So, you know, if you can't see something, you know, it's hard to get into. But after the update, you get a fairly graphical, you know, interactive version of Twitter.
Right. And so for all the developers listening to the show, please test your sites on all the phones. And like we said, you can go out there. I think you can grab the Windows phone emulators for free, right? Because you could always grab like the Express editions and do it that way. Just test them on there. Because it's just really frustrating as a user going to these sites. You know, some of them are a responsive site. And to be honest, I should look at my own too. I believe mine works fine. I really need to check every post though, as they come out. Because what's frustrating is when something like the image doesn't have the max width set. So you can only see half the image. So you see a caption and it's like, hey, look at this really cool thing. And you just see like half of it. And it's impossible to scroll or zoom out. And it's super frustrating as a user. Yeah. So I'm hoping I'm not one of those people. If I am, shame on me. This one's exciting. First look at C# 6 support. So this was a post by ReSharper for ReSharper 9. You want to talk about this one, Carl?
So there's a lot of really cool things coming up in C# 6. Mm-hmm. And this blog post just kind of gives us a glimpse that, one, you know, here's a reminder of what they are. But two, that they already have, you know, other additional tooling in ReSharper to help make all of these language improvements even better. Mm-hmm. So one of the biggest features that at least is getting a lot of press is the conditional access operator.
Yep.
So what this is in the past, instead of doing like, you know, object dot, you know, and checking to see if it's null. And then going in there, you know, you could be doing that several times. You have this tree of just checking if things are null.
Yeah, if person is not equal to null, if person dot name is not equal to null, if person dot name dot first is not equal to null, display so first name. Syntax,
so, you know, code over the air isn't that exciting, but this is easy to explain. So instead of doing that, you would do a question mark dot and then the property. And what that'll do is it'll do that null checking for you. Mm-hmm. So you can, the example they give is declaration.body.statements. So instead of doing that big tree for each one, you can do that. And what's kind of cool in their tooling, they're checking to see if you have some sort of hack already for that. Cause you could have written your own extension method that, you know, if not null, and then you put in a lambda or something. Right. So they check for that and they'll allow you to automatically switch it to a conditional expression.
No, they do really, really intelligent inspection.
Yeah. And they have a lot of ways to flip it back and forth. I think that's pretty exciting.
Okay.
They also have some stuff on there about, you know, working with primary constructors in a little bit better way.
Yeah, there's a couple things in here. So I saw one, auto property? Yeah.
If it detects that you should be using an auto property, it'll.
Yep. But I like the fact that you can declare a new instance right in line. So you can do, it is tough to talk about code on here, but if you have a property declared and it's a private setter, you can just tell it, hey, I want this to be a new, you know, what new foo. And you can just do all that in one line of code so that it gets initialized right away.
Yep. The other thing, other than talking about their specific stuff, is them at the very bottom, they explain how using Roslyn, which they have access to, in their development process just really helps speed them up. So looking at, you know, something that's coming out with C# 6 is the Roslyn compilers. There's a lot of features in there that allow you to, you know, understand more about your code from the code. And we're going to get these features too when that comes out. And I just keep hearing really good positive feedback from people who are using that. And this is just another good example of, you know, people saying all of this stuff that was promised and it sounds great. It really is.
Yeah. And just to be clear, the source code for Roslyn, I believe, is already available, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. If you go to, it's roslyn.codeplex.com and you can check that out. I'm just looking through the code right now just to make sure that's the case. Yeah. I can see all the code in there. That's pretty cool. So kind of building on top of that, one article I found this week that I found kind of interesting was, it's called The Descent to C. And I like this one because, you know, I went to a college, my degree is in computer science, where, you know, we had a lot of these foundational classes that at the time seemed really tedious. And there's times when I look back and I'm like, man, that had nothing to do with what I do in my day-to-day job these days. But the fact is, you know, this is part of this, you know, the underlying system that you use. And I think it's valuable for people to understand how this stuff actually works, because it starts to explain why you have performance issues in certain situations, even with these higher level languages. So this goes through, it has an introduction, and it's not trying to teach you the C language. It's trying to teach you the fundamentals as a C sharp or Java developer. You know, it's just talking about how memory is laid out, which really isn't that complicated. How pointers work, which, you know, it's one thing to understand pointers. It's another to actually program with them. So even just going through this article and understanding, you know, the conceptually how they work. Let's see what else is in here. It's talking about arrays, allocated memory. The fact that there's no string type. Yeah. And it's only, I mean, if you were to print this thing out, it's probably only like 10 pages tops. I mean, it's not, this is actually a pretty easy read for talking about a technical subject like this.
No, I think it is. It's more of it gives you an awareness of what you're working, what's working under the covers for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do get used to the ease of, you know, C sharp, and don't realize all the stuff that's going on underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Or what we would have had to done if C sharp wasn't available. I can't imagine having to write in C.
Yeah, I keep this in the back of my head whenever I'm writing, even in C sharp, because whenever you start doing things in C sharp, let's say you declare a string. And then you add another string to it and you keep appending strings to that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, people don't realize that it's actually making a copy of that each time. And yep. When you actually understand how the memory is laid out, I mean, the only way to avoid that would be to do like a linked list, so that memory would be linking all over the place to sort of bring all those strings together. But then that would be inefficient in a whole bunch of cases. So what C-sharp is doing is it's actually grabbing a new memory location and shoving all of your characters in there, eventually destroying the old ones. And you know, if you start with C-sharp and you haven't used a lower level language like this, you're going to be like, why did they make the decision to do it this way? But it wasn't a decision to do it that way. It was just, you know, a reality of the underlying system.
As a matter of fact, this is one of the reasons why I started using String Builder more often. Mm-hmm. I didn't use it as much before. If it was maybe two or three strings, I'd just append it. But now automatically I'll use String Builder.
Yeah. Well, and the kind of the secret behind String Builder is that it, you know, and until you actually get into huge strings, all this inefficient copying we're talking about, it really doesn't matter in the real world. And in fact, if you have three strings to put together, if you want to keep your code uniform, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're concatenating three strings together, that single copy operation multiple copy operation that's happening in the background is probably more efficient than your String Builder anyway. But anyway, that's really getting into micro optimizations. So that was it for the news. So now we get to talk to Lance McCarthy. So we got a long, long list of credentials here. So we did a little bit of background check on you, Lance, and you're a Telerik employee, a Windows Phone developer, you're a Nokia ambassador, Microsoft MVP, former Harvard assistant professor, and a forensic counselor.
and I believe too, on top of that, don't you fly planes?
I haven't gotten my license yet. Not enough time, but a Cessna 172 is a great plane.
Yeah, just throw that on top too.
Yeah, well, we understand why you don't have any time.
Yeah.
Now, if you could somehow write code while flying, well, that sounds like a bad idea. That's probably against some kind of FAA regulation, I hope.
Yeah.
So do
they did lift it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, for the devices.
Yeah, right. Put a Surface right into the dashboard.
Right, right. Yeah, there you go. That would be interesting. I know they're using them on the, you know, they're using them in the cockpits. They use them. The flight crew uses them now to take orders on Delta. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And what was the other thing with the Surface? I had another example for you. Well, that's all right. Do you want to give us a little bit of a detailed background about yourself?
Yeah. I'll start with my 9-to-5. As you mentioned, it was Telerik. I am a senior support specialist at Telerik. I cover all the XAML products. They are my specialty, but I also help with, you know, ASP.NET Ajax, some Kendo. We have a wide variety of products, so I can't just, you know, we do have specialists in the other areas, but we have to lend a hand. So I have a little taste of everything, but mm-hmm. when something comes in that XAML, it's my responsibility to handle it. So I do that all day. I get to help and debug other people's code, and it's actually rewarding. Some people might balk at that, but I find generous satisfaction in, you know, finding that one bug and sending them back a working project. It's, you know, it's a great reward.
Well, that's got to make you extremely knowledgeable about the ins and outs of those products and of XAML as well. I'm sure you have a way, way better understanding of XAML than I do, and probably of most people.
Well, I mean, I learn something new at least two or three times a week. Right. I go over to Bulgaria. Most of our major engineering teams are in Sofia, Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. So those are the guys that brainstorm, write the code, test it all. And I've spent 2 weeks over there in June working with the teams one-on-one. What an enlightening experience. Learned so much. I'll never stop learning. And XAML is always interesting. There's always something new. For example, today I learned something new about MVVM Lite. I generally write my own view models, but today I was working with the Universal app, and writing my own view models was not working as well as I expected. I threw in MVVM Lite, a view model locator, and boom, everything just works. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a process of evolution. Whether I started on phone and then went to Silverlight, because that's the next evolution that they only did. Sister and brother, mm-hmm. then went to desktop, went WPF, and now we, you know, when RT Universe came out, and now it's just everything.
Okay, pretty cool.
One big happy family. Mm-hmm. So the Nokia job started off as Nokia. I'll give you a little background on that. So in October of 2011, Nokia sent out their feelers, their version of DPE. It's called DX, Developer Experience. They had Rich Dunbar, who is all of the he's the lead ambassador. He was actually the first ambassador. He was the only one, and he did an initial program where write an app, we'll give you a Lumia 800. It did so well that they wanted to expand it. So they looked to the different regions of the U.S. and they said, who's up there that does Windows Phone, or who knows that community? So they found somebody in each area and started off with 9 ambassadors. So I was picked for the New England area, which in the beginning, it was just nobody had regions, right? We didn't know what to expect. So I helped devs in California and Seattle and everywhere else in the country. And although we could not do it officially overseas, I still helped them with their code, but I couldn't award them any devices, which is heartbreaking at times. Then it grew so fast that we needed to separate the region so that we could, you know, more efficiently manage our time and start holding events. Because in the beginning, it was just, hey, let's get you pizza. I'll come by and we'll talk and, you know, and show your web developers about Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Develop Day?
No.
So Develop Day was our first attempt at making a highly organized national event. So we did 4 events. One was in Boston. They're going to get mad at me. I don't remember the other ones.
I was at the one in Chicago.
Oh, that's the event you went to, Carl. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So it's just a big day of training, cram everything into one day. Hopefully you got enough, you know. The range of people that showed up knew nothing about programming to guys who did it 9 to 5. So it's great that we had a wide range of people there. Some people didn't know anything, walked away with the ability to write an app to at least get started. Some guys came and networked. Some guys came and just met us. So it's basically like a little code camp in one day. And we gave you a couple weeks to publish an app. If you published an app, you got yourself a phone. So it was pretty successful. And, you know, we got to meet a lot of people. And it did so well the first time that we did it a second time. So we did one in Chicago, which is my region, and in New York City, which is Nick Landry's region. Mm-hmm. But we partner with the ambassador who's the closest to us. So me and Nick are pretty much a team for our region. We go and we help each other at our events, unless, you know, it's really local. I'll hold weekly events in Boston and the Boston metro area, maybe go up to New Hampshire or Vermont or something, do a small event. But generally they're in the Boston area, and each ambassador does the same thing.
So during those events, do you still, you know, afterward, if they publish an app, do they still get a phone?
It depends. Okay. What I do is I do a giveaway because we can't do one phone per app like we do for Develop Day.
Okay.
So Develop Day was just a carte blanche. Say, hey, get an app in the store. Here's your reward of phone for experiencing how easy it really can be to get published.
Right.
It demystifies the whole development process for whether it be a dev who's not native, might be a web guy, or doesn't, you know, might be scared of the unknown. There might be someone who's new. The whole idea behind it was to familiarize you with XAML and C#, or if you were doing the HTML route, but get an app in the store. And that was the goal. We rewarded you for it with the phone.
Yeah. I got to imagine that pushes them over the hump.
It does. It does. For example, Chicago, highest turnout I've ever had. So it was 85%, I think.
Wow.
Just to put that in perspective, on average, it's 50% show up. So let's say you had 200 people register, only 100 usually show up.
Okay.
So we had 80% turnout, and I think 85% published.
Wow.
So, yeah, it works very well. The phone is a good incentive, but once they see the ambassador's enthusiasm and they realize that we're here to help, you know, I answer emails all day. I used to do it between midnight and 6, but my wife put a stop to that pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't meet many people who have published, you know, one app. It's always, you know, guys like you that have published a whole bunch, or even, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10, you know, it just seems like once you get people started and they, like you said, they realize how easy it is, then that sort of pushes them over the edge. And then they keep thinking up ideas, and then it becomes easier for them to turn, you know, we all have these ideas pop into our head, right? It makes it easier for them to turn those ideas into apps.
Absolutely. And also understanding what is available, you know, whether it's an API set or understanding the limitations of Windows Phone apps and how they work in their environment. Mm-hmm. I've had people ask me can I write an app that sends a secret SMS that takes a snapshot of the user and their screen? I'm like, no, you can't. You know,
and you really don't want to.
No. And I explained that's exactly, you know, Windows Phone was developed this in mind. You want to save the user's privacy and phone resources.
Mm-hmm.
Your app is protected. You're allowed a lot of space once your app's in the foreground. You can do a whole bunch of stuff, but once it goes to the background, it's suspended, and you know it stays there to the user. You can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Battery lasted more than 8 hours. Surprise!
Right? Yeah, I was thinking about an app idea that I know would not be possible, but it would be nice because I was at an event recently where there was a camera set up, and he was taking a time lapse video of us hacking all day. And it was kind of a neat YouTube video. And I was just thinking about it. It would be kind of neat if your camera, if it was using the light sensor, and anytime it was out of your pocket, you know, every minute or 30 seconds, it was taking a picture, and not to look at those individual pictures, but stitch those together. You know, you can make a video like the life of my phone. You know, I'm sure somebody has hacked a phone and figured out how to do that. But yeah, on the flip side of that, it would be a gross violation of privacy, that thing taking right. photos of everything.
Matter of fact, on Twitter, there was a conversation today between two of the people I follow regarding getting access to the user's app list. And it sparked a little controversy because, okay, on one point, someone raised a really good point of, oh, we get access to all their photos. And then the counterpoint was photos aren't really as personal as apps, are they? And it went back and forth. It was pretty interesting. But in the end, the user gives permissions to access certain things. It's very clear when you download the app from the store and what it's doing, but it really can't do anything without your permission. I like that. The only one that really aggravated me was the NFC tap. So in 8.1, that's changed a bit, but originally every time you tapped an NFC tag, you would have to approve it. You know, can your phone accept data from this NFC tag? But with 8.1, that's changed. So you can, for example, Bluetooth LE devices, you know, a lot of times you sync with it, or you have to tap it to start some sort of communication. If you approve that, it won't ask you every time.
Okay, that's nice.
You know?
So how many events do you end up running per year?
Let's see. I've lost count. I really have. So Saturday I held one, WP Dev Summer WP Dev Day, and I wanted to introduce everybody to Universal Apps and just explore the anatomy. It wasn't a deep dive. It was just to familiarize them. They want to deep dive, they can. I'm really against forcing anything down anybody's throat because they're going to resent it because of you doing that. So I lay it out, and if it's interesting enough, you'll be asked more. And that's what happens. I manage myself 381 devs, but to me, it's not that number because everybody feels like one person to me. So it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, get the email. I focus all my attention on you. So between Saturday and today, I've had a ton of people starting their first file new Universal app and have questions about the shared folder. And that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Exploring, learning. And so my events typically kind of, their topics are at my whim or whatever is really trending at that time. App Studio, for example, there was about 2 or 3 months where I went to different user groups and I showed them how to build an App Studio app and download the source code, and just, you know, play with the data templates. On my blog, I have a couple posts where it shows you how to add sample data using Blend to your App Studio app so you could really play around and tweak those data templates to give it a personal feel. And, you know, and then there are the events where they know nothing about XAML. So I'll do HTML5 user groups. And there's a lot of anti-Microsoft sentiment. Last week I taught a class at BU. It was, a bunch of Java guys. But I engage in conversation. I asked them, what is it about Windows Phone that you don't like? And most of the time they just don't know. All they think of is Microsoft. And it's just, they don't look any further than that word. So I throw up the emulator or I'll plug in my phone and show them my start screen. And then the interest peaks. There's always one or two guys that'll just, you know, throw tomatoes if you could. But you ignore them and you do your best for the people that are interested. And since last week, there's already been 2 apps published out of the 6 guys that were in the class.
Well, that's pretty cool.
You know, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, there's anybody who knows about the Nokia Ambassadors or about the develop.com website knows about the other. But really, what is the relationship between the two? I mean, is it by the same group or is there a little bit of separation?
Between what?
Between the develop.com website and the Nokia Ambassador program. Can you just kind of explain that a little bit?
Okay, so develop is pretty much our lineage. We started at the same time. Develop was the initial idea, but it started on its own parallel path while the ambassadors were on their own parallel path. But as Develop grew, it was our job to involve people to show the rewards. So the whole, for the people that are listening today who aren't familiar with Develop, it's a site that lays out a bunch of challenges for you to complete. The challenge is an app that you publish. One of the most recent ones is about camping. So you go and you find a campground. You build an app that shows the user all the features of the campground. You publish it to the store. And your developer profile is linked with your Windows Phone developer account. So it can see. It syncs up about every 24 hours. It does it automatically for you. But it syncs up with any published apps you have. You just go into the challenge and you select it. You submit the app that you had built for it. You can submit any app, but it'll fail if it's not the one that you built for that challenge. Then you get XP. It's just like Xbox gamer points, except that you get to spend it on real life stuff. Like an Xbox, if you want, or gift cards, or new phones. But you get rewarded. And while I'm doing my user groups, or I'm doing my events, Develop Day is directly tied to Develop, where you did a survey to prove that you were there, and when you did complete the app, you'd get a code, and the code would give you the phone. Then there are the events that I hold that are just me, that aren't related to Develop. But behind Develop, there's nothing much. It's not directly linked to anything than itself. There is a Nokia developer site, which is a global version of Develop without the rewards. It's just, it's like MSDN for Nokia.
All right. So we know that you cover Boston. You mentioned Nick covers kind of the New York area. How do we find out who our Nokia Ambassador is in our area, and how do we reach out to them if we need assistance?
Outside of reaching one of us directly, you could always go to develop.com. That's spelled DV as in Victor, LUP.com, /, /ambassadors. I think it's, I'm going to pull it up right now. I think it's actually in the bottom left.
Okay.
Yep, I'm on it here too. So I see different regions. Oh yeah, it has the ambassador list down at the bottom.
And there's a nice little video, and you see a map of the country with different color codes. And there's a list, and you see our Twitter handles. Twitter is usually a very good way to get in touch with us, because we generally, me personally, I'm pretty neurotic about answering my tweets before I answer emails. But I don't like seeing that badge on my Twitter tile that says how many tweets I have unanswered. So
right.
But all the guys are great guys. They're great teammates. We travel a lot together. We go to events like Build, or you know, we might go to Seattle to do a round table with Microsoft and Windows Phone teams to make sure that every developer has everything they need. We do this in a variety, you know, so many different ways we can do this for you. So what it really comes down to is, are you interested? Yes, contact us, and then we will work it out, whatever you need, and figure it out.
Yeah, if you want to, if you go to that ambassador page, what I would do is I would follow each of the ambassadors on there. There's probably the amount of knowledge that you'd probably get from that group of people would be amazing.
Yep, the only one I don't see there, they haven't updated, is George. So Robert, his Twitter handle is the Cheeky Taurus. Mm-hmm. He covers Northern California. So the map is a couple weeks out of date. We just recently took on Robert Schievert, who on Twitter is at the Cheeky Taurus.
So I guess that plays into my next question that I had lined up was, is there any changes to your mission since Nokia was sold to Microsoft, or are things kind of going pretty much as they always were for you guys?
Well, we're a little bit insulated. So during the change, of course, the infrastructure changed where my email went from at Nokia to at Microsoft. But the ambassadors, we're an external program, and our mission is just simply to help that. It's just a matter of what's going on internally, regardless of what happens down the road right now. As of this moment, we're still doing what we're doing. It's business as usual. It's business as usual. But you know, worst case scenario, let's say something did happen. Each one of those guys on the list, including myself, are still here to help you. You know, I'm an MVP. Regardless of whether or not I was working for Microsoft, it's still, I'm here to help you. And each one of those guys on the list still feel the same way. And that's why they are ambassadors.
Yeah. So Jason had talked about a little bit earlier about like how many apps that you've done. Can you tell us anything that you're working on now?
Yeah. So let me actually start off. So if you're listening today and you haven't done an app yet, I just do one. Doesn't matter how bad it is. I still have my worst app ever published still visible on my account. You know, this just to show that it doesn't matter where you start, just to get it done and play with it. You know, at one point I only worked with XAML. I didn't do any C sharp. So it was all done in Blend with the animations and stuff. But as I learned more, my apps became more sophisticated, and you know, the better I did. So one of my more popular apps, and I won my first hackathon for it, is called Video Diary. This is back when Windows Phone 7 didn't allow you to record any video that was not put on your camera roll. So I wanted to provide a way that you could record private diary entries or private video that would just stay inside the isolated storage of the app. Mm. And I still have 70,000 to 80,000 users. It's got 156,000 downloads, I think, somewhere around there. All my apps total, I have approaching 800,000 downloads. But that particular one is I'm the most proud of because it's the first time that I really dug in and tried. So every time that there was a bug, I'd release an update. every time there was a user feedback, I'd work on it, respond to the user, make the changes in the app, and publish it. And it was my first experience with catering to the users above and beyond anything else. And that's brings me to that's my current project. So like I said, it was developed for Windows Phone 7. So there are many phones out there today where the experience has changed. The video is sideways. Some camera sensors aren't working as expected. On the 520, the screen goes blank if it starts recording. So this is using the old file sync approach where you just take it and you sync it to an MP4. So I'm starting from scratch, and I've made it a universal app. So I think in about 30, 45 days, I'll have a beta ready. To anybody that has, in order to be a linked universal app too. So if you purchased a front facing camera unlock, you'll still have it in Windows. You still own it across all your devices and the experience is much better. Right now I'm in the prototype phase where all the video recording is working and, next step is the UI. It high def. It works across all the different tablets I've used and the phones I've used. So I'm really looking forward to providing that and delivering it to my users to, you know, reward them for their loyalty pretty much.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Especially like you said, bringing something that's from the Windows Phone 7 days, bringing it forward. I know there's a lot of people out there that still have Windows Phone 7 apps or have recently made the transition and their apps, not all of them come with them. So, you know, not letting your users down is huge.
Yeah, you know, look at the downloads for each app, and you know, if you have any sort of analytics in there that are telling you how many people are still using it, do that. It doesn't take much to actually update it to Windows Phone 8 to keep it alive at least. It's just open in Visual Studio, right click, retarget the Windows Phone 8. Then you can worry about give yourself, you know, 6 more months to worry about moving it to 8.1, or if you have the time now, do it in one shot to 8.1. But that said, be aware of the limitations of Silverlight 8.1. You might have some things that still need 8.0. If you have any questions about that, I'm always available to help. There's a list of things that aren't available. For example, camera photo chooser task. That's an 8.0 Silverlight task that's part of the OS, which is an amazing OS feature for devs. You just new it up and say show, and it brings you back a photo or a new photo or a user chosen photo from their camera rolls or albums or whatever. If you're the dev, you just 4 lines of code and you're done. You know, things like that aren't always available in 8.1, but they're doing their best to, you know, move everything in as we evolve.
So if somebody's looking for an app idea, would it be a good idea to, you know, I just thought about this when you were talking about the 7 apps, the Windows Phone 7 apps, you know, go through the store, look for the Phone 7 apps that haven't been updated. You know, maybe they had a lot of people, a big following, but, you know, there's just the developer has disappeared or, you know, hasn't really kept up to date on it. Would that be a good opportunity? I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
No, that is sage advice. Whether it be the Windows Phone Store, the iOS Store, whether it be, you know, go to any store that you see a popular app that's missing from Windows Phone. You can be an overnight sensation, make a lot of money really quick. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure that you monetize them correctly. I recommend, it depends on the app, but generally speaking, I recommend making the app free so you have the most visibility and the most accessibility by users. The current ratio is maybe 1 to 10. So for every 1 download you would have gotten with a paid app, you'll get 10 with free. And then that same number transfers over to purchases. So if you do the trial, but I think it should be free when you offer in-app purchases to either unlock ads. So if you wanted to make your monetize your app with an ad at the top. So there are pretty much 2 different types of users out there. Ones that don't mind the ad and ones that hate the ads. The ones that hate the ad don't mind paying the 99 cents or the $1.29 to remove the ads out of the app. You could also, I recommend this as well, you put in a donate button, and the donate button goes to a page that offers different values. So you can have a donate $1, donate $5, donate $10 to you, and you've made the app completely free with no ads. And you'd be surprised at how much revenue you make just from doing that.
Yeah, I've noticed that the apps that I have that are free compared to paid, I would say it's even more than 1 to 10 ratio. It's huge. Yeah. So, I mean, you've given us a lot of tips, a lot of great advice. Any advice that you would give to, you know, a new developer, an aspiring developer, somebody who even has a few apps out there, any additional advice or tips that we may have left out?
So let's say that you might have done one app or you've done none. Definitely go check out Bob Tabor's video. It doesn't matter. I went back and redid the series again, and you still find new things. So Bob Tabor has a video series on Channel 9. It might have gotten moved to Microsoft Virtual Academy, but you'll find it just by searching. Or you guys can put the link on the show notes or something.
Is this the one with tons of different parts? It's the Windows Phone 8.1 development for absolute beginners?
Yep, that's the one.
Yep, I found it. It's a whole series.
Great series.
Yep. Okay. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yep, it's great. He takes you through part by part and teaches you things. He also has C# fundamentals for absolute beginners, something similar. Mm-hmm. That's a good one as well. Especially if you're new to Windows Phone, you might be jumping in. You might have a little familiarity with XAML. Do the C# class too, because he goes into a little bit about inheritance and some of the great things that C# does. It makes you more aware of what you're working with and can increase your, you know, you might now start abstracting certain things into your view model or whatever, and you become a better developer, even if you are experienced. So I highly recommend going back and doing some of those classes.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll put that into the show notes for everybody. So one thing, whenever I was looking at a little bit of your background, one thing that I saw was that you were part of the team that won the hackathon at Build 2013, which I thought was a pretty big accomplishment in my mind.
That's so much fun.
Yeah, I want to hear what that experience was like.
I have a thing for hackathons. So before I came an ambassador, I've never lost a hackathon. So when this one came up, I had to do it. I like Netduino and adding that hardware flair to software. Mm-hmm. I have some experience with Bluetooth and communication between Windows Phone and different Bluetooth module, and you can easily pass data through a stream socket. It's pretty simple once you see it. And so what we did was this is advice for any hackathon. Doesn't mean just the Build hackathon. You look at the available categories and you think of ways to implement it into your app. So you make you widen the scope of what your project is. So we had a Windows 8 app. We had an Azure implementation for leaderboards. This will make sense when I explain what it does. We had Netduino, which is a hardware aspect, and we had Windows Phone. So the way I'll start off as the user and give you the user experience. There's this little 3D printed disk that has an Apple logo on it. The Apple logo underneath it has a pressure sensor, which is connected to a Netduino, which has a Bluetooth adapter on it. And then there's a person holding a Windows Phone, and it has this pretty little gauge on it. So then your goal is to hit that Apple logo as hard as you can. So when you hit that, it senses how much pressure you've done, and it over, I think I did it for 20 milliseconds. So I sampled the whole hit. Every 20 milliseconds got a value of how hard you hit it, so you'd see a nice little waveform. The Windows Phone captured that data and then sent it up to Azure. In Azure, we had a leaderboard and toast notifications sent down to the Windows 8 client, which had a bunch of teller charts and a leaderboard to show who the person was that hit it the hardest. So, and we called it iSmack. So it was pretty cool. We had a long line of people waiting to hit it, and it actually broke. So I had to run back to Radio Shack and get some liquid wire. It's just like nickel that's in a solvent, so to fix the sensor. But it was a good time. That was my first chance to get a Nokia 925. The Lumia 925 is a beautiful device. It was before it got released. So that was my incentive to get that done. Even though I was an ambassador, I didn't have one yet. So I wanted it.
But, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, hackathons are awesome. That's how I came up with Video Diary. That's where I got the idea for Video Diary. So even if you're sitting at home and you don't have any app ideas, go to a hackathon. Team up with someone. In Boston, there's one coming up for PayPal. It's called Battle Hack. Mm-hmm. Don't come to the Boston one because that's what I'm going to.
Yeah, we did have
you're saying the one.
Yeah, we did have an episode on Battle Hack before.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Yep.
I was a judge for the New York City one last year, but this year I'm not involved as a judge, so I'm going to participate. So I'm looking forward to that.
Pretty cool. Any other questions, Carl? Are we ready to move on? Okay. So now we're getting to our Azure pick of the week. We got a good one this week. So it's not a particular feature, but it's a free ebook. So this one was written by a couple people, including the goo himself, Scott Guthrie. And it's called Building Cloud Apps with Microsoft Azure. So you can download it in a couple different formats. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. He gave a presentation talking about some of the topics in here, but I skimmed through the book so far, and it's pretty good. It just goes through and talks about, you know, a lot of different features, and it tries to tie a lot of those features together. I haven't didn't get a chance to read it yet, but it looks like it's a really good book. So make sure that you check that one out. And Carl, what's the app of the week?
So this is actually a pretty big app. It's called Stealthy Camera. And what it does is it utilizes the video on your phone and it turns the phone into a web server. So you can, on a browser on the same network, you can log into like 192.168.1. whatever, or whatever your IP address is. It'll tell you on the phone what to go to, so you don't have to worry about that. But it'll stream the video that you're capturing to the website, so somebody on the website can view that remotely. So you could turn it into, you know, a surveillance camera. You can play games with it, all sorts of things. You can also record the video. You can take the video that you've recorded and stream it to the website remotely as well. There's a bunch of other things. You can use the website to flip the video on and off, to flip to front, back cameras, all sorts of things. I was actually, when I was researching this, I was playing with this with my kids. I would give them the phones and just let them go throughout the house and let some of my other kids sit back and watch them, you know, just kind of create and explore and have fun with the dog and all that stuff. So, it's got a free trial. It's a buck to buy it. It's well worth the, you know, hours of fun that you and your kids can have with it. Or,
that's pretty cool.
Or if you're just into surveillance, I mean, there's a lot of options with this. So
yeah, that brings up a good point. Now you have to, so while the app has to be running, right, for you to stay connected.
It will work under the lock screen with the screen turned off. It calls that stealthy mode.
Okay.
So,
but if you go into a different app, it turns off.
I didn't test that scenario per se, but I would assume so.
Yeah, I guess it could. Well, that'd be interesting, because I guess it could act as like a video VoIP service. Yeah, I'm kind of curious if that works, because you could almost rig these things up. You know, you could use that app corner feature that we talked about and set that as the only app that works on the phone. And you could use that as part of your home surveillance system, especially you buy probably the 520. You know, you can get that thing for $45 every once in a while. I've seen it go that low. It starts to maybe make sense as a security camera. But I think as a kid's toy, I mean, both of my kids have, well, my one son has a Windows 8 phone with a broken screen because I dropped it on the floor. So, you know, he might want to play around with this. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Or you could earn a phone off of develop. So there's another option.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I need to get my kids to start building some apps so they can get some free phones.
Oh, hey, I mean, speaking of kids, at Develop Day, we've had a couple show up. And as a matter of fact, one of them is now on the App Studio's main page. The news of him and his app spread like wildfire. He's 8 years old, and now he's front and center on App Studio. So get your kids involved. App Studio is a great way to start because they don't have to worry about the code yet. Mm-hmm. You get them involved and interested in building the app and seeing it. There is something magical about seeing your work come alive in a device that fits in your hand.
Right.
There's no way to really describe that with words other than you to do it. And that's kind of what, you know, the ambassadors do. You try to show that magic by having you experience it. So if you have, you know, kids that are interested in technology and, you know, or if they just like apps, period, just show them App Studio. And you can go to apps. I think it's appstudio.com. And just have them build an app with their favorite YouTube characters, and they'll see it come to life in their hands and then might want to learn more.
Yeah, kids love to build this stuff. My my son came home one night and he's like, yeah, we were making slideshows at school using PowerPoint. He's like, do I have PowerPoint on my computer? I'm like, well, I can put it on there. And actually he used the web version. And, he sat in there for hours just making PowerPoint presentations. I just got such a kick out of that. So kids, they just love to create things.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool. So Lance, I appreciate you having you on, you joining us. So, where can people find you and your work?
The quickest way to reach me is on Twitter. It's Lance W. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. You can email me. I think the best way, instead of explaining my whole email, just do lance.wpdev@outlook.com.
Okay.
And I have a blog, just lancemccarthy.com. We'll bring you right to it. If you want to see any of my apps, there's some I can't mention on the show. I'm pretty lighthearted when it comes to building apps. So if you just look up Lancelot Software, you'll see all of my apps. Check out Kiss Dictionary. It's my latest release. Has an Azure backend. I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay, pretty cool. Yeah, we'll include a link to all of that, all of your sites in the show notes here. If you want to send feedback to the show, you can email us at feedback@msdevshow.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show by searching for MS Dev Show in your favorite podcasting app. And you can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. And where can they find you, Carl?
You can find me at wpdevguy.com or twitter.com/Carl Schweitzer.
Perfect. Thanks again, Lance.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been an honor.